happen to be on this beautiful Saturday morning. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. Ironically, I'm Rob. Beth in the studio today.
Happy Saturday.
Unbelievable. Not in Monterey, but joining us here in the studio.
And you know how I always start with, it's a beautiful day in Monterey, hot and sunny.
Yes.
Here we are in Cincinnati, and it's rainy.
It's cold and rainy, yeah.
But it's okay. It's okay because it's sunny inside the studio.
It is. It's bright and sunny. TC is looking at us through the window. It's bright and sunny.
Yay.
It's a good thing. So welcome back to Cincinnati.
Thanks. Thanks. We're just here for a few days, and it's good. It's good. Kids got a little break from school. We came home to do some events and conferences, and it's fun to be back.
Yep. It's already June.
I know.
Can you believe this?
End of the year.
I can't believe it. So, anyway, it was cool last night. I know listeners are just going to hear what we have to say because I haven't seen you face to face in a while. And last night we had this cool, like, volunteer get together appreciation dinner kind of thing. And I saw so many people that I hadn't seen in forever. It was a back-to-back thing. And how cool was that? I mean, I didn't expect there to be so many people there.
I was thinking about how we hosted something because we wanted our volunteers to know how much we appreciated them. I know the volunteers came out because they wanted us to know as back-to-back how much they appreciate us. It was just one big appreciation fest.
It was gigantic appreciation. Well, there's probably 250 or 300 people just from sort of the greater Cincinnati.
Almost 400.
Wow.
I know.
I need to improve my estimation skills.
Someone told me.
A big room, and it was full of people.
It was so full of people, and it was fun because there are folks who have traveled with us to our India site, our Nigerian site, our Haitian site, the Mexican sites. And so it was fun just to be able to reminisce and encourage and remember stories and plan for the future and encourage one another. And
it was a good thing.
I liked it.
And I would be remiss. I didn't plan on doing this, but if, you know, back-to-back, I got to give you a plug for this summer. I think you have just a handful of openings still left for people who, hey, like me, who are like, I want to do something this summer. Is it too late to do something this summer?
It is not.
And so you have some short-term mission opportunities still open. Am I right about that?
You are. You can come for 1 week still to the Mazatlan site and to the Monterey site. We have some spots up. I'm not sure if we have any spots left in our Cancun site, but you can come to Mexico. We would love. I think there's actually a few spots in the July trip to India. So if you are interested in still going on a short-term missions trip, you or your family member or you as an entire family, we would love to host you.
You know what's very impressive about that?
What is that?
We did not plan to talk about this, and off the top of your head, you're like, well, yeah, so a week in July, we have in India. I mean, you just, bang, you knew it right off the top. I would not be surprised if you're like, flight DL-1706, actually, arrives in, that's right. So that was very impressive right off the top of your
head. It is my day job, yes.
It is your day job, so that's a good thing. And I cannot encourage people enough. It's awesome. I mean, I've been there a number of times, but my family's been there, kid-friendly, whatever. It's a great trip. So if you're looking for something to do, do it.
One of the things I like about going on a short-term mission trip is all the mileage you get after you get home. So you have all the anticipation and build-up, and then you have this incredible experience, and then you get to come home and interact in whatever your sphere of influence is and continue to find mileage in your own walk with the Lord and in your community.
Backtoback.org. would be the way to get that back, the number 2 back.org. We have, I think one of my favorite guests in the past year has been Jonalyn Fincher. And she was here, I don't know, a couple months ago or something?
Yeah.
And so she's back today. Last time she was on, we said, man, we need to have her back with her husband. And so actually her husband Dale is also going to be on today. They're going to be talking about their book, Coffee Shop Conversations, Making the Most of Spiritual Small Talk. She was awesome. And we talked about the show just between us for at least a couple of weeks on. I mean, it was, you know, it wasn't like, oh, that was an interesting show. She talked about, can you have a best friend of the opposite sex?
Yeah, I find some of her material to be quite conversation starting in and of itself. So to the fact she wrote a whole book about that, I'm thinking she's qualified.
That's exactly right. And it's not can you. She was actually encouraging people. So it wasn't can you. It was like you should.
Yeah. I said she has a video out about a talk she gave at
Biola
University on the subject of we should find healthy platonic relationships with members of the opposite sex so that we can experience parts of God's character that we wouldn't otherwise in our own gender. And it's fascinating.
It was fascinating. It's one of those things is, you know, if you're sort of in the more conservative side or the evangelical side or, I don't know, maybe total, I don't know, but it's not something that coming up people like push you to pursue, and actually they push you not to pursue such a thing. And so intriguing, refreshing, energizing to have this person watch her on the video at Viola and then on the show just say, hey, well, you know, we have looked at this perhaps in the wrong way. And, I mean, I had that conversation with three or four or five people, and it was like, huh.
I think it's going to come up today. What do you think?
I think it probably will.
I mean, I like the idea, this idea that we can be starting conversations of a spiritual nature, because I do think in today, there's a vacuum of that. You know, there's, you've heard me say before that I think that folks who do not have a faith in Christ believe that you have to be a fanatic or nothing. And the idea of being a fanatic is so utterly intimidating that they right. don't, they just default to nothing. And the idea that you can have a faith in Christ and be approachable in a coffee shop and be conversational and be, you know, all the other things, it's just, we're just leaving a good impression.
Right.
On who he is and what it looks like to love him.
Right, and it can be, interestingly enough, it can be hard for people of faith to just have a relaxing, engaging conversation, like you said, without either sounding like a freak or, and they're like, oh my gosh, maybe I'll sound too crazy or
pressuring.
maybe I shouldn't bring it up, or I have to convert these people in the next, you know, 2 weeks, or
just sell them something.
Yeah, and it's just, hey, so this book, Coffee Shop Conversations, is a great, just, hey, relax. Have some great conversations, you know, have some small talk, and it's not hard to incorporate what it means to be a follower of Jesus in the midst of that. And I can't think of two people who probably would be more interesting to listen to and talk to about this conversation than Dale and John Lynn.
I think when, just conversations start of my own, I'm sure this isn't their book because this is at our current events, but I heard today that the new Pope, which all my listeners know, I am not Catholic, but I am such a fan of the
yes.
new Pope.
You love the simplicity of Pope Francis.
I do. He just made a decision recently that went all around the news that to bypass where the Pope typically lives in order to take on a more modest dwelling. It's just one room, has a bathroom, there's nobody attending to him there. And his statement was, I think I will best serve the church, remaining who it is that I've always been, and I want to start and set an example from the top that if we're going to be about reform, we need to be about change. And yeah. I just like that. I think yeah. right off the bat, he's a great leader.
Bang, you have decided.
I've decided. Yeah. I mean, he could have anything he wanted. He's the Pope.
That's right.
And so I think that would be a good conversation starter.
That would be, just to talk about the Pope?
And just to talk about the choices he made and the idea of simplicity and change starting from the top. I mean, some of our own statesmen in this country could take a lesson from the idea of, you want to be about reform, start with yourself.
Yeah.
I think that's a good conversation starter. I encourage you, listeners.
That's right. And
get into a coffee shop
next
today.
Next week, Ken Blanchard's going to be on the show. And holy cow, is there anybody who knows more about leadership and management than Ken Blanchard? Maybe we'll ask Ken Blanchard about the Pope's leadership style. Right. The other part that I really like about Pope Francis is he's taken the dark conversation about child abuse and all of that amongst priests, and he's put that out. He's like, we're not going to bury this. He's talking openly about how we need to deal with this, how we need to, and that is in somewhat contradiction to the previous way of doing things, which is we're going to figure this out internally and it's going to be a private conversation. So he definitely, I'm sure there's some culture shock going on in the Vatican and around the world as a result of kind of his style of doing things.
Speaking of leadership, this last week when I was at a conference, I heard Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann share.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, I just was at the edge of my seat listening to her talk about, she was a former foster parent, so she was there talking about orphan causes, but she's got more leadership in her big toe than some people have in their whole body. I mean, and in the way in which she began her career as a stateswoman and where God has taken her and the way that she stands up for him in the public arena, it was inspiring.
Well, you don't become involved in politics, especially to the level of running for president, or at least the Republican nomination, like her or don't like her, you gotta have some skill, you gotta have some savvy. So I bet you she was very interesting to talk to. Listen to.
Yet another conversation.
Absolutely. Hey, we have a great show today, Coffee Shop Conversations, Making the Most of Spiritual Small Talk with John Lynn and Dale Fincher. And if you heard John Lynn before, you definitely are gonna stick around. If you didn't hear her before, you better stick around. I can't wait to hear Dale as part of that conversation as well. So this is Real Life with Beth and Rob, and we will be back right after this break.
Who's Weaving Your Story? The Story Weaver series by Beth Guckenberger highlights the plight of orphans throughout the world in personal, heart-grabbing stories of loss, struggle, and redemption. the kind of redemption only God, the great story weaver, can accomplish. Written for ages 8 and up, Tales of the Not Forgotten and Tales of the Defended Ones reveal God's ability to create a story far greater than we can imagine. And the corresponding 6-part Leader's Guides on CD help turn each book's content into a simple yet powerful 6-week curriculum for any church or small group. Use both together and you have a 12-week curriculum full of fun activities, compelling stories, biblical teaching, and practical applications. Let God weave your story and see what He can accomplish for orphans worldwide. The Story Weaver series is published by Standard Publishing and is available at www.standardpub.com or your favorite Christian bookstore.
Saturday morning, wherever you happen to be on this Saturday morning. Beth, welcome back.
Thank you.
So great to have you actually face-to-face in the studio. Most people don't know the mechanizations that we go through when you're not here.
I know. Satellite.
We're FaceTiming each other so we can actually see one another, and you're calling to Dallas, and they're patching you in. And
foreign countries.
It's crazy. This is just so much easier.
This is way easier.
John Lynn Fincher was on the show a couple months ago, and it was just a one segment, like 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And we both said, wow, that was awesome conversation. Mm-hmm. It carried on for a couple of weeks. And I remember, I think even during the segment, we said, we need to have John Lynn and her husband back. Right? We need the duo.
We did say that.
And lucky for us, we did not turn John Lynn off, and they agreed to come.
I know.
So we must have done okay.
I think we actually said something like, let's invite them sometime to have coffee with us. I think that would be a good conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been there all night, but now we can just do it here, and they're on for the whole show.
And we're letting our listening audience in on this conversation.
In on this conversation. Basically, they're sitting at the table next to us.
I like that.
Right, and we're basically just going to have whatever conversation we find interesting. But we're specifically going to be talking about this awesome book, Coffee Shop Conversations, Making the Most of Spiritual Small Talk, with Dale and John Lynn Fincher. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
How are you guys?
We're great. We're actually talking about technological funny things. We are in different rooms in our house, both on Google Hangouts, so we can see each other while we're talking to you across the country.
There you go.
Yes. Most of our listeners know that Rob and I live in another country, so Rob and I go through this crazy amount of technology in order to be able to do show together, but today we're in the audience, so we can totally picture what it is that you guys are doing.
Absolutely. Now, you know, I could read your bios, but they're both incredibly long because you do a number of things, but Solation is one of those things. Maybe that's sort of an umbrella over all of these things. And so, Dale, welcome to the show, by the way.
Thank you. It's very good to be here. Good to hear your voices.
Great to have you. Tell us just a little bit before we jump into the book. Tell us about Solation. How did it start? You know, what was the dream there? How does it work?
Sure. Solation is spelled S-O-U-L-A-T-I-O-N. So the idea of having healthy souls. And we came out of an apologetics type of background where, you know, defending the faith and standing up for Jesus in the public square was of great importance. And what we realized was that it wasn't just in order to live a full Christian life, in order to give the kind of answer that we need to our culture. It wasn't about just having the right textbook answers, but about living the right kind of life and inviting people into the life of Jesus himself. And so our mission is to help people become more fully human in Jesus, because we have found that across the whole world, the one that makes us the most fully human, the one that makes us most fully ourselves, the one who sets us free, is Jesus. And so we set up Solation to try to address today's cultural needs and the individual needs, because we believe that once the soul changes, then culture begins to change in the world around us.
You know, one of the things that we talk about on this radio show is that we like to inspire conversations that continue on throughout the day. And as I was listening to you just now, I was thinking that I'm sure within Solation, part of what you hope to do, and correct me if I'm wrong, is to begin conversations that people then take into their workplace or their home life or in their friendship circles or whatever their sphere of influence is. So tell me a little bit about who is in the conversation of Solation. Who is it that you've engaged in those conversations?
Well, we're primarily focused on reaching 20 to 40-year-olds, the millennial generation specifically. But we found that The people who come to us are really anyone who wants to grow, people who love Jesus and want to grow. So our goal is not to make Solation groupies. Our goal is to empower people to come to us, whether online or through our gatherings where they come to Steamboat Springs, Colorado, where we live, and return them home with tools to discover their vocation with more strength, to return to their jobs and their families with more love, and to discover that Jesus is not excited about rules as much as he's excited about freeing them to discover the way they are gifted for this time and this place.
Before we jump in, there's some particular chapters in the book that I'd love to kind of pull out and talk more in depth about. But before we do that, can you explain a little bit, maybe summarize a little bit, what inspired the book Coffee Shop Conversations? Give us kind of a summary of what it's about.
Sure. What inspired it was we wrote a series of articles on our website about rethinking evangelism so that we are dignifying the people that we are talking to, that we're not giving sales pitches, but we're really humanizing the conversation. And out of that, a publisher approached us and asked us if we'd be willing to put together a book proposal to write about this. So that is kind of what, you know, birthed and launched the book. But it really comes out of a deep need for both of us and a deep desire for both of us. Growing up in a strong evangelical families and churches, it seemed as though evangelism itself was the most important thing that God cares about, or the most important thing that pleases him. And so in our own upbringing, we tried so hard to follow all the rules of evangelism that you get, you know, when special speakers come to your churches, or the rules that you hear, you know, about giving these 4 points, and if you give these, then you're doing it right. And we found like we were utter failures when we approached it that way. And it was through, you know, kind of the school of hard knocks of going out and actually talking to real people and meeting people where they were and talking about what concerned them at their heart level, helped us realize that there is freedom to talk about Jesus in a wild and wide variety of ways. And we wanted to tap into that and help share with others the freedom that we found to be present with people and to love them without feeling like we have to seal a deal or convert them, or else we're all, you know, failures of following Jesus. So it was that kind of approach and out of that kind of background that helped us put this book together.
Can I add to that just a little bit? Because I want to make the point that when Dale said we were unsuccessful, I think I want to clarify, we were actually unsuccessful, not that we didn't help people convert, because we did get people to convert to Christianity, but we found that years later, they didn't want Christianity anymore.
So there was something in that exchange where there was some initial, yes, I'm in, but it lacked some type of depth that allowed them to hold on to it.
That's right.
Exactly.
It lacked the ultimate purpose.
Yeah.
I'm involved in social justice issues around the world, and I'm always telling folks that it's way more compelling to talk about what God is doing than it is to talk about what man isn't doing. When we talk about what man isn't doing, we get an initial kind of knee-jerk, guilt-driven reaction, but over time it dies out. When you talk about what God is doing, you get swept up into something bigger than yourself, and that gives you gas for the rest of time, really. And it sounds like that,
right?
Like that same kind of approach. And when you're sharing the gospel, like talking more about how God is for you than maybe how you are against him.
That's right. I totally agree with that. I mean, how discouraging is that if somebody comes up to you and says, let me tell you how bad you are, instead of saying, let me invite you into a world that is much larger, because, you know, all of us can do a lot better. And telling us that we can do better only motivates us for about 5 minutes. It's knowing what are the benefits on the other side, and knowing that we can fulfill our ultimate purpose with God, that really compels us to shed off that old life and walk into a much more free life with Jesus.
We're talking with Dale and Jonalyn Fincher about their book, Coffee Shop Conversations, Making the Most of Spiritual Small Talk. And in Chapter 2, Loving Discourse, you talk about manners of loving discourse. Can you unpack that a little bit? It's a really intriguing chapter.
Well, we found that it's really easy to put your foot in your mouth when you're nervous. And when you're sharing your faith or you're talking politics, these are two areas that most of us get nervous. So we figured it was probably good to just set some ground rules. And one of the most important things to point out is rules for having a spiritual and loving conversation are not about trying not to mess up. I mean, the point of rules at any time in our life is to have fun. That's why we learn the rules of riding a bike, or that's why we learn the rules of how to ski. So the point of these rules is to enjoy your conversations as you share the life you enjoy with Jesus. And we just run through some things that were very helpful to us, especially in this post-Christian culture. One of the ones that has helped me the most is to know every time I walk up to a person, I am meeting an image bearer of God, somebody who reflects something about God to me, even if, and this is where it gets controversial, even if they're an atheist, they are still made in God's image.
Hmm. Do you find that is a controversial thing? I mean, I think, to me at least, that seems somewhat second nature, but I guess there are plenty of people who think, gosh, if they don't even believe in a God, then that means something different.
Yeah,
that's
there
right.
are. You can find the reviews on our Amazon book. You can find people disagreeing with us quite heatedly about that point.
Wow. All right. Well, that's not very fun at all. So, you know, we have a few minutes left before the break. What are the manners or the rules of loving discourse that you lay out in Chapter 2?
Sure. We lay out seven of them. And some of them sound very obvious, and some of them require a little bit of unpacking. But let me run through the seven. And if
sure.
there's ones that sound interesting to you, let's unpack them. Number one is respect one another. Number two, step into each other's shoes. So you step into their shoes. Manner number three is wrestle on your own. Number four is never judge a thing by its abuses. Number five is
update your opinions.
Mm-hmm. of others. Number six is share your own personal stories. And number seven is, and this is one's my favorite, allow others to remain unconvinced.
Yeah, that obviously to me is the one that jumps off the page. So, and it sounds like it's most interesting to you as well. What about that is so compelling to you, that rule for loving discourse?
Well, for me, it number one, it allows the conversation to keep going, because we don't want to do some sort of conversational filibuster on somebody where we end up just talking and talking and talking until we can try to get them to bend to what it is that we're saying, because that's a very unloving thing to do. But allowing others to remain unconvinced means the conversation can remain open, which means we expect to talk to them, hope to talk to them again in the future, or somebody else will talk to them and we haven't turned them off completely with our obnoxious insistence. It also tells us that we are dignifying their mind, heart, and soul. And this is what love does. It says, you know, you are on your journey the way you are on it, and I may not have been able to convince you of whatever it is that my view is or help change your mind. That's okay. It may be something deficient in me, and I just didn't present it right, and that's okay too. God is not up in heaven biting his nails hoping that we get everything right. He is there. He's for us, and he's also for the person that we're talking to. So with God, he knows that the conversation is never closed, because we live on this life and there's so many people that come along our pathway that we can trust that God knows what he's doing and that he's working in the hearts of the people who do not yet know him, even when we are not there. So it's an act of faith, it's an act of love, it's an act of dignity to let other people remain unconvinced when the conversation is over.
You mentioned at the beginning of this segment just a little bit about the idea that you're really reaching out to 20 to 40-year-olds, the millennial generation. And what you just said seems to be a huge generational difference between those over 40 and those under 40. This idea that people can leave with their own opinion as compared to I've got to convince them or give them the apologetics so that they are convinced and make a decision. It really sounds like that may be a generational difference for the people who might read your book.
It could be, and I do see sort of a distinction between those two generations in terms of authority and where authority lies. I think the millennials don't assume that the church has authority, so that's one reason that letting people be unconvinced is important. But I would push back a little bit on that, Rob, and say that I have found people of all ages who truly love me and want to know me. They will hold back that itch to close the deal with me on any topic because they're trying to understand my perspective first. And I think the fear that people will go to hell if we don't close the deal has actually muted our ability to love. And this is across generations. You know, fear is a great motivator, but it's not the best motivator.
And John Fincher about their book Coffee Shop Conversations, and we're at a hard break at the bottom of the hour, so John Lynn, I'm sorry to cut you off, but we will be back right after this break and continue this conversation.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care, at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
If becoming or staying debt-free is important to you, you're not alone. 10 years ago, I was worried sick, overwhelmed with debt, and so tired of not having enough at the end of the month to make ends meet. I was working a full-time job, but getting deeper in debt every month, and I hated being away from my children. I finally said, that's enough, and I made a decision to do whatever it took to get free from the terrible debt that was causing me so much stress. I'm Gina Neef, and I want to invite you to find the same financial freedom that I found. Not only did I pay my way out of debt, I was also able to leave my corporate job and work from home and be completely available to my family. For years now, I've worked part-time hours, making more than a full-time job would ever pay. I remember the pain of being in over my head, and I'll never forget the joy of becoming debt-free. That's why I show others how to do the same. If you're ready to work from home and find financial freedom, then I'm eager to show you how. Go to findingfreedomnow.com. Discover how you can get free from debt. Go to findingfreedomnow.com.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach, but more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
With Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning. Live in the studio right here beside you.
Yep. I'm a little embarrassed. We're talking about having these great conversations, and I wasn't driving the bus very well, and all of a sudden I had to cut off.
Ironic.
Kind of ironic that I had to cut off our guest in the middle of having a really great conversation.
We're talking about loving discourse, and you knock her out.
I know. That wasn't very good. But we're talking to Dale and Jonalyn Fincher about their book, Coffee Shop Conversations. And Jonalyn, I apologize. I'm right in the middle of what you were saying.
Oh, that's okay. It was actually very ironic
and fun.
Yes.
I think she was letting you remain unconvinced, so you...
Well, we were talking a little bit about the difference in perhaps generational difference between millennials and those over 40 about this idea of remaining unconvinced. And I love the fact that John Lynn said, I'm going to push back a little bit.
I was just going to say,
I love that.
It kind of, you know, John Lynn, Rob and I are friends. We've been friends for 20 years, and I'm frequently starting my sentence with that. I think I'm going to push back a little bit. But I might have, like, did a little fist pump in the air when you started out that way. But I think you're right. I think we can find folks who have been raised well by Jesus in their faith time, as they've been working out their faith with faith and trembling, who know how to reflect him and his values when they're in relationship and conversation. In fact, I know children who can do that well, as well as, you know, folks who are long past the millennial generation. So I'm all with you. I was in and agreeing with you when we went to the commercial break.
Well, thank you. I've noticed that when people are in love, whether it's romance or family or friends, you know, if they love someone, they can give them the high courtesy of heaven because they trust that God loves them with that same kind of intensity. And that's really what we want to motivate our conversations. We want to meet someone, find out they believe differently from us, and then step into their shoes and imagine if we were them, what would we want to be asked? How would we want to be listened to? And that's really what the Wrestling on Your Own is about. How does their worldview or their beliefs give them what they're hoping for, or how is it going to leave them bankrupt?
I have a dear friend who does not love Jesus even remotely in the ways that I do. And at the end of the day, when I finish talking to him, I think to myself, I believe in the sovereignty of God more than I believe in my ability to bring up the right things at the right moments, or his ability to be paying attention to my subtle whatever, you know, commentary. You know, more than any of it, I just trust in the sovereignty of God. And exactly what you said, I trust that Jesus loves him more than I do. And that if he uses me to be a part of the conversation, fantastic. But to think that the whole ball of wax sits in my hands is way too much pressure for me and him, and that relationship and friendship would crumble under that kind of weight.
That's right. That's right. It's too much of a burden for our shoulders. You know, I have a really good friend who's in dialogue with a neighbor of hers who's been caught in an affair, and her husband's threatening to leave, and they have several children. And my friend has said that she's trying to love her and to share things with her, but she said to me just the other day, I don't think my friend wants truth. I think she just wants to know I'm there for her, but she doesn't want to talk about it. And, you know, I was gonna counsel my friend to just kind of leave it, but then my friend said to me, I feel like I need to open that door one more time for her, to give her a chance to see that she's walking down a path that's going to hurt her, hurt her children, hurt her ability to love. But I'm not going to do it until I know it's the right time.
Hmm. Yeah.
I admire that so much.
Absolutely. Hey, we're talking with Dale and John Lynn Fincher about their book, among other things, about their book Coffee Shop Conversations. And there is this sort of tension that we walk, and I don't know that it's a necessary one, when we're talking to anybody, but especially non-believing friends of ours, about, oh my gosh, you know, I've either got to do this or sell that. And I really enjoyed this idea that you have about making mountains out of molehills and molehills out of mountains, and how, you know, in our own internal conversation, sometimes we can do this. Can you talk a little bit about those chapters in the book and how that might help our listeners, you know, as they engage with non-believing friends?
Yes, and those chapters are about when we really get into the thick of these conversations and the controversial things that come up. The mountains that are molehills, I mean, what these are the things that we as Christians make a big deal out of and insist others should make a big deal out of them too. Or they are things that our neighbors make a big deal out of, and we minimize and say that's not right or that's irrelevant. And I think we have to pay attention to what the world considers good news. If the gospel means good news, we need to listen to what they hear as good news in light of the culture that's happening around them right now. So, for example, we may think that they need to understand that the Bible has no errors in it whatsoever. And we may feel like we have to convince them of that even before we could talk about Jesus and his resurrection and his good life that he offers. And that would be a mountain to us that is really a molehill to them. Right. because trying to defend something like the inerrancy of Scripture is not as important as demonstrating that Jesus rose from the dead, for example. But let's flip the coin and say, what does our neighbor really care about that we often diminish? And some of these might be issues about homosexuality, in which we are not listening well to our gay neighbor. We're just thinking about how we can tell them how wrong they are. Or the sexism in the Bible, where they perceive that women are treated as second-class citizens, and we just dismiss it as, oh, that's no big deal. You just need to trust what the Bible says. Now let's move on. These become obstacles for the people that we listen to, and if we do not take them seriously and have a good, robust biblical answer and a loving answer, then it turns people off from even considering the life that Jesus is offering to them. So these are the mountains and the molehills that we have to wrestle with on a daily basis when we're talking to people.
It really seems to be born out of what goes all the way back to chapter 2 about rule or manner number 1, which is respecting the other person, if we really are respecting them and where they're coming at as far as an issue is concerned, then those mountains and molehills may flatten out over time in the conversation.
Yeah, I think they do. But we have to realize that somebody convinced us or persuaded us that what we think is true, and that is the same idea that happens to our neighbors. That if they believe something differently from us, it's because somebody has persuaded them that that is true. Now we're kind of on a level playing field. Somebody has persuaded us that our view is true. Now we want to enter into a respectful conversation with what does what we believe really line up with the way things really are. And that allows us to then have a lot of respect and to understand that nobody in this conversation is superior to the other or has any special secret insights to the other person. We all have to kind of stand on level playing field and share with what we know and see whether even what we believe stands up to scrutiny.
I mean, again, to reference my day job, you know, I work in the social justice arena, and we're always talking about how the best ministry is done in exchange. That when we think we have all that somebody needs, and then we come and give it to them and walk away, we rob them of a tremendous amount and create dependency and all kinds of things in that area. But it sounds like that same kind of thinking is infiltrating the conversations and the way in which you want to live life, that you want to have an exchange. You want to take from them their thoughts and feelings and listen and process and maybe readjust even what you think and offer to them. And really, that beautiful exchange is far more inviting than any well-articulated argument we could ever come up with, right, about what it is that we believe.
That is
very
so true.
Very true. I think of how so much of our evangelism is done like a drive-by act, where we just shoot out some answers and we don't expect our neighbors to shape our spiritual conversations. So we end up having to trust experts to take statistics to tell us what our culture is thinking, when if we just spent a half hour every Friday talking with two people at our local library or our local coffee shop, we could learn the pulse of this culture.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing we talked about in the segment before you all got on is that we were listening a little bit to some of your podcasts and talks that you had given, Jonalyn, after you were on last time. And one of the conversations that you started was the idea of cross-gender friendships and having that kind of exchangeable conversation with someone that we're not married to and isn't of the same gender. Would you be up to sticking around after the break and talking a little bit about that before we close out our show today?
Oh, of course I would. I'd love to.
And part of that conversation was also, I'm wondering, I wonder what Dale thinks about all this. How is he cool with that? How did he start? So we are interested in engaging in that conversation a little bit with you guys after the break, and we'll go from there. Does that sound okay?
Great.
Yeah, good. You know, one thing, Beth, that strikes me about this conversation, by the way, we're talking about coffee shop conversations, but as I go around their website and I look around the Fincher's stuff, videos, whatever, just about everything that they talk about, everything they write about, is just so intriguing to me. So I don't think you can go wrong. Go to Solation or look them up and Google them or whatever. You can't go wrong. It is going to press into areas that I think that we just kind of skim over sometimes or don't think about.
Yeah, I was just speaking in a very conservative Christian school about, oh, I don't know, a week or two ago, and I mentioned the word Holy Spirit in my talk.
Uh-oh.
And afterwards, these three little girls found me, our high school students found me in the backstage, and they were just like, I wanted someone to talk about that so much.
Yeah. And that relational part, even our relational connection with God through the Holy Spirit, it's just something that the church doesn't, in general, doesn't do a great job of. And so I love these kinds of conversations.
Me too.
Hey, anyway, you're listening to Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Kuchenberger, our guests, Dave Dale and Jonalyn Fincher. And we're going to talk some more right after this break.
This past summer, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to India, where I met a little girl named Shailaja from an orphanage with back-to-back. She was a new child at the home and was having a hard time adjusting. As I began playing with her and painting her nails, I was reminded that this little girl was just like my sisters back at home in the United States. Instead of a face on a photo, she became a part of my family when I realized that I could continue to help her through back-to-back's child sponsorship program. Even though she lives over 8,000 miles away, through the back-to-back sponsorship program, I can ensure that her spiritual, physical, educational, emotional, and social needs are met. The best part about the program is when I come home from school and find a letter from Shailaja. I am so thankful for God working within both of our hearts in order to lead us closer to each other and closer to Him. Visit www.backtoback.org for more information.
With Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Kuchenberger. Beth, how are you?
I'm doing so good.
I love the show.
Face to face.
Yeah, we're talking face to face. And we're talking with Dale and Jonalyn Fincher about the book Coffee Shop Conversations. And the last time Jonalyn was on, and we had this great conversation about same gender relationships, and so we wanted to dive into that a little
cross-gender relationships.
Oh, yeah. What did I say? Same?
Just yeah,
it's
sure
just it's an old habit.
Completely different conversation.
It's an old habit. Well, I mean, that wouldn't be intriguing at all. I mean, come on.
That would be going in a different direction than we are in the next 10 minutes.
Welcome back, guys. Glad to have you on the show.
Thank you.
You know, Jonalyn, after we had our conversation on air, I went and looked and watched a talk that you gave at Biola University about when Harry met Sally, and I just was thinking for our listeners, could you kind of quickly summarize what your family approach is to cross-gender friendship so we could get everybody kind of caught up to speed, and then we could talk for a few minutes about that.
Sure, Beth, I'd love to. Well, my understanding of male-female or cross-sex friendships is really based on the pioneering work of Dan Brennan, who wrote a book called Sacred Union, Sacred Passions, which plows a new trail for men and women to be friends that has been previously walked well by people in the Bible, including Jesus. And the topic I spoke on at Biola University was for their Tory Honors Conference, and trying to show how we need to stop as Christians just following two steps behind what the world and the culture is saying. Instead, we need to actually lead culturally, much like Daniel in Babylon or Esther in Persia. And my recommendation was to consider that since Jesus had friends who were women, since he fostered those friendships and that he even enjoyed those friendships, we can show the world that the ideas that are very popular, like from the movie When Harry Met Sally, men and women cannot be friends because the sex thing gets in the way. We can actually show another way, that love actually does conquer all things, that love never fails, and that men and women, when they look into each other's eyes, they can sense the difference and the beauty in that difference, but they don't need to be so afraid that electricity will fly, that they will dehumanize one another into lust, and that the love we feel for the cross-sex friends in our own families can be a model for the cross-sex friends we have in the body of Christ, because as Paul wrote to Timothy, we are to treat those who are the opposite sex as brothers, as uncles, as fathers, or if you're a man, to treat the older women as mothers, the younger women as sisters, with all purity.
And if I remember correctly, you used this as an example, a cross-gender, cross-sex friendship, actually with a man that your husband introduced you to, if I remember that correctly.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, my husband's best friend's name is Brian, and I got to know him and his wife through my husband, who went to college with them both.
So Dale, obviously, I was thinking, you know, what was that like? I mean, did you go in to it saying, hey, I don't have any problem with this, or as it grew, did you and Jonathan talk to one another? How did that unfold?
Well, first, I tell Jonathan that he was my friend first, and that she just can't take him away from me. That was the first part. But overall, when Jonathan became interested in this topic of cross-sex friendship, it was something we had never talked about, but it was something that I had already assumed in many ways. Because I have women who are friends of mine. I have a couple who are really close friends of mine, have been for years and years and years. And it didn't even occur to me that this is something that should be shunned, should be looked negatively on, or that I was in some sort of danger. I think the big issue that we face is that we don't know the rules of having healthy friendships. There are no rules sitting around. We have tons of dating rules, but we don't have a lot of friendship rules about when you meet somebody of the opposite sex, don't eroticize or think of the potential of an erotic relationship right away. Look at this person as a human being who is different from you, that God is trying to reflect himself to you through them. And I think this only happens for people who are healthy or are growing towards becoming healthy, because then you know where the boundaries are at and you know where you can go and where you can't go. I think there are so many things that men and women can have in common and can challenge each other on and see things from different points of view that do not that involve our minds and our emotions, our wills, the projects that we work on, the deep things we care about, that we can connect with long before there's any consideration of something sexual or something romantic coming out of it. So I have no problem with Jonathan being friends with my friend, because I trust my friend and I trust Jonathan. And a way that you know that your friendship is maybe becoming unhealthy is when you start to feel exclusive in your friendship, meaning you don't want others to be included. You want this to be a special thing between the two of you. That's not friendship. Exclusivity is when romance starts to enter into the picture, and I think is a good gauge. But when there's an openness and an invitation for one another, then the friendship can truly blossom, because it's not just two now. It might be three or four as those friendships deepen and become more intimate and more trusting.
What do you say? You know, like, go ahead.
Go ahead, Pat. No, you go ahead, Pat.
I was just going to say that. You're so loving in your discourse. I was going to say that I had this conversation with a male friend of mine. I mean, he's actually not that close a friend of mine. I was just running by him this idea. Like, tell me, do you have female friends? You know, do you, outside of, like, work or places where you have to have them around? And he said to me, I don't trust myself. And I, it was like a conversation stopper. I didn't know what to say next, because there's nothing I can do about that. And I was just like, what do you say to someone who's so shuts himself off from half the population of the planet because they don't trust themselves?
Right. Well, earlier you were talking about not pointing out the negative in the other person, but inviting them into the positive. I think the positive thing is you could say, you know what? I think you could totally grow in this area, so that you can grow strong enough to have a healthy relationship with someone of the opposite sex without it turning into a lust. But that's how you can say Jesus can set you free in that, rather than just considering, oh, that must be now the rules of the road. You've just bound yourself into a type of friendship legalism, and you drew a boundary where not even Jesus draws it.
There is a gender narrative, Beth, that says that men, to be really masculine, have to be these wild, sexually depraved people who, when they see a woman, go crazy, they go wild. And this is a fallen narrative, a fallen form of masculinity. And there's a female version of this narrative that says a woman's body is so captivating, she drives men wild. And so you get all these kinds of oppressive views of modesty, femininity, masculinity out of these. And one of the things Dale and I speak on regularly, because we're a husband-wife team, is that when men and women work together with dignity and respect, we see more of the image of God on earth. And this doesn't only happen in marriage. I mean, you, Beth, and you, Rob, right now are showing the world what it's like when a man and woman are hosting a show. You play off each other. There's a mutual delight and laughter that happens. There's an appreciation that happens. And within the professionalism of your work and the way you love one another purely in Christ, you are showing the world more of what God is like. And the world is captivated by that.
Well, I appreciate that. I do consider Beth one of my best friends. And so, you know, when it was almost a relief as we talked the last time about, hey, this is not something I need to be uncomfortable around, and I should be able to tell people, hey, one of my best friends in the world happens to be a woman, and she happens to be friends with my wife, and the whole thing that you talked about in sort of a conservative evangelical culture that, you know, you're not supposed to go to lunch with a woman by yourself. You shouldn't be anywhere alone with a woman or the opposite way around. And so it is a refreshing message, even though I'm 48. I'm not in the millennial generation. It's still a refreshing message
for
me.
I think I technically am. I'm just saying. Maybe that's the reason we can do it.
You know, it's interesting. Just one thought. You know, I was reading the news today, actually the other day, and there was a rapper on stage. I don't know if you saw this in the news recently. And it's kind of a PG-13 comment. But he was performing, and supposedly, against his wishes, a woman in the front row began to perform a sex act on him. And what was interesting to me was the comment afterwards. A woman in this person's band, this rapper's band, said he had a reputation to uphold, and he couldn't say no. And so when you were talking about this idea that the masculine message is, I have to be such a turn-on to women that this is part of what I do, it really steps out this idea that there's that cultural narrative and the one that we can redeem that says it doesn't have to be about this.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's exactly right. Dale, did you want to comment on that at all?
I think that's. I think that is a super. I mean, it's a super good example of that of what that narrative is. And if we truly have the myth of masculinity that says that a man cannot tame his sexual desires and that women must do it for him, then we have completely demoralized the humanity of a man. Because what it means to grow more fully human means that we have the willpower not only to know the good, but to choose it. And to be strong people, human beings, we have total control over our sexual desires, our sexual drives, and we can tame them. Like in The Great Divorce, there is that scene with the red lizard, if you remember the scene, and the red lizard represents lust. And as the scene unfolds, this man who has the lizard on his shoulder, he keeps making these excuses for it until he just is at his wit's end. He doesn't know what to do. So he asks the angel in front of him to just kill it. And the angel reaches over, he grasps the lizard, he breaks its back, and he throws it on the ground. And then something amazing happens. See, if that was just the typical, you know, evangelical narrative, it would be, that was great, the lust is dead. But the reality is, that lizard turned into a great stallion, and the man became its master. And he was able to ride that stallion up over the hills, over the mountains to the place of God. And that is what I think we need to redeem about our own sexuality. And when we can redeem what our sexuality means and our control over it, then I think our friendships between men and women can prosper.
Yeah, what a great picture that is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guys, thanks so much for being on the show. Where can people find you, find about Solation, find about the books? What's a great place for them to go?
They can come to solation.org, and you'll find our blogs. We have a team of 12 writers and podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at Solation, at Jonalyn Fincher, or at Dale Fincher. And you can join us for the ongoing conversation, or if you really want to get to know us, you can sign up for a gathering and come meet us here in Colorado.
Well, it sounds fabulous. And I hope that maybe someday in the future, you and I and the four of us may sit down and have a coffee shop conversation together.
That would be awesome.
That would be a good
person.
Thing. Thanks so much for being on the show. Blessings to you guys.
You too as well. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Have a great day. Dale and Jonalyn Fincher. Coffee shop conversations. I could talk to those guys for hours.
I mean, I think if our desire is to create conversations that folks continue on throughout the day, we kind of started a lot of them.
Oh, my gosh, absolutely. If you go to their stuff, I mean, you could have conversations to start every day for about 2 weeks.
I was just thinking, about how they were saying that we need to be a people that lead the culture and not be two steps behind.
Absolutely.
I mean, such good advice.
Absolutely. Hey, thanks for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed the conversation that we had. Ken Blanchard is going to be on next week, so you might want to tune in for that as well. Have a great Saturday. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall, Beth Guckenberger. Check us out on Facebook. Follow us along on BethGuckenberger.com, any of those places. Until next Saturday, have a great day.